It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson in for Kate Archer Kent. Everyone pretty much agrees that our transportation infrastructure is in tough shape. The problem is how to pay to fix it. Well, what about toll roads? That idea isn't new. State lawmakers have long studied and debated establishing tolls to address our state's problems with crumbling roads and bridges. But this year, with legislative leaders voicing interest and Governor Tony Evers showing openness, we may be closer to toll roads than ever before. What questions do you have about establishing tolls? What do you want to know about tolls in other states? How would you feel about tolls being set up in Wisconsin? Give us a call at 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Our guide to understanding tolls and how they operate around the country is Rocky Moretti, Director of Policy and Research at a national transportation research nonprofit called TRIP. Rocky, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, John. Thanks for having me on the show.
Wisconsin has studied and debated the idea of toll roads and bridges for decades. If the state wanted to place them on existing interstates, I believe the first step would be getting federal approval. Is that right?
What we've seen is when the interstate system was first put in place, it prohibited tolling on these new free highways, although it grandfathered in the Pennsylvania Turnpike and some additional sections of tollways that had already been built. Prior to that, in the 1950s, we've seen increasing liberalization of that. States are now allowed, if they add additional capacity, if they add additional lanes on an existing interstate, to toll that additional capacity. And also now, states can apply for pilot permits, which would allow them, if they reconstruct a portion of the interstate, to toll it. And the big challenge across the country is the interstate system is now 60 years old in many cases, and it does need to be reconstructed. And so we haven't seen states take on tolling their system unless it already was tolled. And, you know, you can think of a number of examples in Illinois and the Ohio Turnpike and across the country. But, for example, Connecticut had tolled their interstates until the 1980s when the tolls were removed for a variety of reasons. And now they're debating the possibility of reinstating those tolls on the interstate. So it's certainly something being looked at far more closely, and even some suggestions that the federal government just allow states to make that decision on their own.
So what those states that have tried getting federal approval for existing interstates to toll them in recent years, what was that process like?
Well, the impediment really hasn't been the federal government in that it has been really more states deciding if that's the appropriate funding mechanism. Most transportation improvements are paid for by a variety of user fees, including in Wisconsin, fuel user fees, registration and license fees, and for local roads, often general taxation. So those have been the traditional sources. But if you look at what's happening across the United States in terms of tolling, we've seen a continued modest increase in the miles that are being tolled, particularly in the area of managed lanes, which are largely in urban areas, where we've seen a significant increase recently in the number of those projects.
And how often are new tolls rejected by the federal government? I mean, are certain types of tolls more likely to be approved than others?
Well, again, it's really not the federal government that is really the largest impediment here. If you look at the experience of Texas, Texas continues to experience tremendous growth, and tolling is really seen as not a substitute for traditional user fees like the motor fuel tax and registration and license fees, but how do you pay for that additional capacity? Oftentimes in urban areas where it's very, very expensive to provide that additional capacity and typically beyond the reach of most state governments even using federal funds. And so Texas very aggressively moved into adding toll facilities, over $5 billion of facilities, largely in the Houston, Dallas, and Austin area. But it engendered a public backlash to the point where now the legislature in 2014 and 15, when they passed significant new funding bills, said none of the new funding could be commingled with projects that included tolling. And so again, that is the challenge, is that you can't move faster than you have public support. And it can't be at the expense of your traditional funding sources, which also need to be kept at an appropriate level to maintain the system beyond just the interstates and your major routes.
Rocky Moretti is Director of Policy and Research at a national transportation research nonprofit called TRIP. We're wondering what you think about the idea of establishing toll roads in Wisconsin. What do you think? Would that be something that would be helpful? Are you opposed to it? What do you think about the idea? 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Let's take a call from Steve, who joins us from Madison this morning. Steve, hello.
Yeah, good morning. Toll roads are often connected to the idea of privatization of highways and all other municipal public services. And we need to know whether the group TRIP is connected to either the Koch brothers funding or other conservative groups funding like that, and whether it's we need to know whether it's connected to a nationwide program by ALEC to do this, provide toll roads, and then trend toward privatization of public transport system.
Steve, thanks. TRIP isn't an advocacy group, is it, Rocky?
We're advocates in that we support the need for a well-maintained, safe and efficient transportation system, and that's really why we're at the table. And in Wisconsin, over half the roads in the Madison-Milwaukee area are in poor condition. About a tenth of the bridges are structurally deficient. And with travel increasing very rapidly at over 2% a year, you're seeing traffic congestion getting worse. So we're advocates for solving those problems. To go back to the caller, we're not funded by the Koch brothers or any particular political groups with agenda, let's say, of privatization in this case. But Steve makes an important point, though. The reason we've seen there's now 42 what are called managed lane projects existing in the U.S., and typically what that means is additional lanes are added along a busy section of arterial, typically an interstate, like the I-35 hot lanes in Twin Cities. A hot lane means high occupancy vehicles, typically with three or four people in the car, can use that road, or if you use it, a toll is charged to reflect the value of that additional capacity at rush hour. And so the reason those are happening is the additional capacity is needed, but without a funding stream, you can't generate the revenues that are needed. So it allows some type of debt financing. And so when you hear public-private partnerships, those are the type of projects, for example, in Atlanta along I-75 through that very congested corridor. Recently, they've added additional lanes that if you go on those lanes, you're going to get through that rush hour very quickly, but you'll pay a premium for it. What they found is that certainly the people who are willing to pay the extra money have seen a reduction in congestion, but it's also improved travel speeds on the general purpose lanes. Mm-hmm. And so there's been public acceptance because they realize that the people using that additional lane are paying for it directly, but it's also improved traffic on the general purpose lanes.
I don't want to start a new point now. We're going to continue our conversation with Rocky Moretti in just a moment. Wondering what you think. Let us know what your opinion is of toll roads. 800-642-1234. Rocky, when we come back, I want to address the idea that what we're talking about in Wisconsin is using tolls to pay for maintenance. You're talking about tolls to pay for new construction, and I'd like to contrast those two things. I'm John Munson in for Kate Archer Kent. You're listening to the Ideas Network. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson in for Kate Archer Kent. We're talking about toll roads with Rocky Moretti, Director of Policy and Research at a national transportation research nonprofit called TRIP. You have a line with us at 800-642-1234. What are the roads like where you live? Do you think adding tolls would help address our maintenance problem? Would you rather pay tolls or higher gas prices? How do you think Wisconsin lawmakers should address the state's crumbling infrastructure? Let us know what you think at 800-642-1234. Let's hear from Ray, who is calling us from Juneau City this morning. Ray, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my comments. I drive a lot for work down in the state of Illinois on their toll road system, and I can say firsthand what an absolute mess of construction and delays it has been for 30 years. And I also drive a lot in Wisconsin, and what a joy it is to drive on freeways. So there must be a better way to fund the roads, and I'd love to hear your comments off air. Thank you.
Ray, thanks. Thanks so much for that call, Rocky. What about it? I mean, Illinois. Ray says Illinois is kind of a mess, and he'd rather drive on a freeway. How common is that sentiment?
Well, if you look at sort of the discussion, and it's largely focused on the interstate system. The reality is what we've seen in the last 6 years. 30 states have significantly increased their user fees. So that was a recognition that they had fallen that far behind, that they needed to bring in adequate resources for maintaining the existing system. And obviously, a lot of that is off the interstate system. It's roads and bridges all over the state. So tolling really isn't a panacea or certainly in lieu of having adequate user fees to maintain the overall system. But if you're looking specifically at your major highways like the interstate system, you can look at the Ohio Turnpike that was able to use the funds coming in from the Turnpike not only to maintain that in good condition, but also some of the other key routes in that corridor. And so if the tolling is adequate to maintain the existing route that's being tolled, there are provisions that allow some of that money then in that corridor to be used on other routes. So, again, it can be a supplement, but not a replacement for traditional user fees.
Well, that's an important distinction because the discussion in Wisconsin among the political leadership, they've been talking about tolls to help pay for highway maintenance. Rather than well, there'd be some new construction because we have uncompleted areas of freeway in Wisconsin. But that's a real important distinction. I'm glad that Ray brought up the point of, what's a better way to finance our roads. So that's an important clarification. Let's go back to the phones, and we'll take Dennis in Madison next. Dennis, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, I drive a commercial truck over the road, and these tolls have gotten to be such a mess for us. Like, we have these automatic passes that go in the windows to read these. They're supposed to work in multi-states. They don't. Then we get the police pulling up behind us, telling us we didn't pay a toll. But we go through tolls trying to go to a grocery store, logistics center, wherever, and there's nobody there to collect the money, to pay the money. So we're kind of stuck with trying to use the passes. But having said that, it's been such a hassle with me, and I own a company. We avoid the tolls. In Denver, Colorado, for instance, put in 470 around town to avoid some of the traffic in downtown, yet they're not manned stations to solve some of these problems. We run Interstate 80 into Interstate 25 and go back south or north and run right through the middle of the town because it's too much of a hassle for these toll roads. The same time you look at Pennsylvania, it's $350 to cross Interstate 80 in Pennsylvania from one end of the state to the other. We as truck drivers aren't getting paid $350 more for these loads. So, yeah, it doesn't get passed on. You know, right now the trucking industry is hurting for drivers. It's also hurting because of the financial rates for the last 9 months. Just the last couple of weeks, there's been on average one or two major truck companies go bankrupt because we don't have the dollars in there.
Mm-hmm. We get it, Dennis. It's tolls are expensive and they just aren't workable. Rocky, what are some of the problems that are common? And in particular, Dennis's comment: well, we'll just avoid those roads if we can. That's certainly one of the criticisms of tolls is that they lead to heavier traffic on other roads.
Well, Dennis raises a lot of, I think, very, very critical points there, and all worth discussing. The collection costs on tolls generally run about 10%, where from traditional user fees it's around 1%. Now, that tends to be trending down, and really where this is headed with tolls is moving towards all electronic tolling. But as Dennis points out, if you don't do a good job of easing that for the customer, of making one pass work on numerous systems, and certainly the toll industry is working hard on all of those categories, then you get the public starting to question it. And so it's critical that it's implemented and run in a way that the customer is satisfied with that. And then the other issue is trucking. And clearly, trucks pay higher tolls, and that's a reflection of obviously they put a lot more wear and tear on the system. But again, equity is very critical. And if the toll rates are too high, people will start to look for other alternatives. And oftentimes that might not be an alternative that's as safe as being on a limited access freeway. So a lot of issues that need to be balanced there. And then most critically, again, the way to look at tolling is that it should be part of the funding toolkit. So it's available for additional capacity in large urban areas. Increasingly, it's being looked at as a potential for interstates or other major roads. There was a national study that looked at tolling the entire interstate system and found that would raise an additional $112 billion a year. Well, we're a long way from that proposal moving forward. But again, at the end of the day, people want to be on a safe, efficient, well-maintained transportation system, and what we're really discussing is what's the most equitable and fairest way to pay for it.
Rocky, tolls are often talked about as a way to address Wisconsin's long-term needs, but not the state's immediate needs, and there are a lot of them. But once a state wants to build a toll, how long can it take before you start collecting money?
Well, some of the proposals that are out there now, particularly looking at doing it system-wide, perhaps for interstates or other major routes, what they've suggested is you make the significant reconstruction and improvements before you start to collect additional tolls. And so in essence, public support is critical. And if you don't proceed in a way that you have that public support, then you're in the position that we've seen in several states where the legislature start to back off, and that's appropriate. You know, if you don't do it correctly, again, you're going to actually pull back from it. But again, my concern in Wisconsin would be tolls shouldn't be seen as on their own solving all of the state's transportation challenges. Again, we would see it as being part of the solution. But at the end of the day, when you look across the state at the level of transportation needs, you're going to need a funding solution that's adequate and pulls on a number of sources.
So what do states do with the money generated from tolls? Is that money sequestered and limited to only certain purposes?
Well, if you look at the states that right now are bringing in the most revenue from tolling, and that would be New York, Florida, New Jersey, Illinois, and Texas, and really Texas has come into that list more recently, or you take a look at Virginia and Maryland, who recently have become more significant tolling states. In Virginia, they've added additional lanes along the Washington Beltway. In Maryland, they had what was called the Intercounty Connector, an 18-mile stretch across the middle of the state between the Washington Metro and Baltimore Metro areas that had been on the books for 50 years. Maryland was able to build that system. The traffic grew by 9% last year, so the tremendous demand has been addressed. And those resources are largely going to maintain, first to build that additional capacity, and then to maintain it.
Are there tolls in the country that could be a warning to Wisconsin, some of which may have ended up being more of a financial liability than a benefit?
There's been several examples where an extension or an additional freeway was built, and the initial projections for use didn't come in at that level. And so that obviously required some adjustments of the agreements in terms of paying off the bonds for that, or in some cases the state stepped in. So, you know, that has sometimes, but that, to be honest, has been the rare exception. Typically, the additional toll capacity, particularly the managed lanes that are really blossoming across the country, have been very successful because they address this tremendous demand for congestion relief. People put a lot of value on their time, and so it allowed the customer willing to pay for additional mobility to get that mobility.
All right, and Rocky, we'll have to leave it there. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it, John.
Rocky Moretti is Director of Policy and Research at a national transportation research nonprofit called TRIP. The news is next, and then we're talking about grocery stores that sell alcohol to online shoppers. We want to hear from you about that idea. 800-642-1234. I'm John Munson in for Kate Archer Kent. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson in for Kate Archer Kent. WPR is producing a series this month called High Tolerance, about Wisconsin's often complicated relationship with alcohol. And in a state known for excessive drinking, some are concerned about providing even easier access to alcohol through online grocery stores. Shemaine Mills has this report.
Grocery shopping's changing. Driving to the store no longer means having to go in the store. Instead, you can stay in your car, where items chosen online are delivered to your vehicle at a scheduled pickup time.
All right, so the click-and-go sign says, let us know you're here, text your name, or call this number.
Curbside pickup goes by various names depending on the store. Festival Foods calls it click-and-go, and I'm their first customer buying alcohol online. It's that new.
All right, I need to find my ID here because I'm assuming they'll ask for proof of age.
My ID is scanned by a grocery employee who brings out my purchase.
Yeah, like I said, the receipt's in that bag for you, and then you should be all set.
While many grocery stores sell alcohol, most of it's purchased in-store. As Rossley is strolling up and down the grocery aisles, picking out what he wants for dinner with his girlfriend. In the cart, there's some fresh fish, vegetables, and a six-pack of beer. The 24-year-old likes picking out some purchases in person, not on a computer screen.
Place your item in the bagging area.
It depends on the circumstances, but I would be open to the possibility. Currently, I would like to choose in the store.
People with kids, you know, don't want to bring their kids in and they can just pick things up.
That's former Madison Alderwoman Liddell Zellers. She voted to allow curbside pickup of alcoholic grocery stores.
They can just pick things up, including if they do want to get some beer or wine. The other side of it is probably most people know we are a state that is known for drinking and sometimes binge drinking.
Madison City officials eventually approved curbside pickup of alcohol ordered online, but so far it's been a non-starter in Neenah, where Alderwoman Marge Bates has helped lead the charge against online alcohol. She says the Fox Valley has too much binge drinking, something that gets splashed across the national news whenever there's a story on alcohol consumption.
A couple years ago, Oshkosh and Neenah were like number two in the nation, not two in the state, two in the nation.
The battle over where and how people get booze is being debated across Wisconsin because curbside pickup of alcohol ordered online is relatively new, and it's local officials like Bates who will decide whether a retailer can amend their liquor license to allow it.
Well, I understand people needing to get their groceries out in their car. When I had little kids, I would have loved to be able to do that, but it's one more step to say I can't get out of my car to get alcohol. It's not like the same thing as I need diapers. I need milk.
For over a year in nearby Appleton, a Pick and Save grocery has offered curbside pickup of alcohol. Officer Megan Cash says so far they haven't had any problems with minors trying to buy alcohol or intoxicated drivers.
There's always concern when anything changes, but it appears that we have a pretty good plan in place to safeguard any issues that would come up.
Brandon Scholes from the Wisconsin Grocers Association predicts online shopping will be the norm someday.
This business will double in the next year or two, and double and double and double. It will grow significantly.
He's talking about online food sales, but with grocery stores selling a significant amount of alcohol purchased in the state, that will also mean beer, wine, and spirits in communities that decide to allow it. Shemaine Mills, Wisconsin Public Radio.
You can find all of the high-tolerance stories online at WPR.org/alcohol. And now we're joined by Brandon Scholes, President and CEO of Wisconsin Grocers Association, which represents the state's grocery industry. Listeners, we want to hear from you on the topic of liquor being part of what grocery stores sell online. Do you think municipalities should make it easier for grocery stores to include alcohol in their online grocery sales? 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Brandon, thanks for joining us on the morning show.
Good morning, John. Thanks very much.
A study from the Food Marketing Institute and Nielsen showed that online grocery sales are predicted to capture 20% of total grocery retail by 2025. What does that mean for alcohol sales?
Well, it probably means that sales of beer, wine, and spirits will be sold at the same rate that it is now. Just because you can order online doesn't mean all of a sudden you're going to order two or three times more than what you would normally buy if you went to the store.
The Wisconsin Grocers Association will be at the Capitol this week to help to speak to legislation that both clarifies the pickup of alcohol and allows for alcohol delivery. What does current law in Wisconsin say about alcohol and pickup and delivery?
Well, Wisconsin state law is relatively silent because each municipality determines its own rules and regulations in terms of how you do it. For example, some municipalities, when they issue a liquor license, a Class A license that allows you to sell a beer, wine, and spirits, some require that you only do the sale in the liquor department. So you have to have a separate register, a separate door, and you can't pay for it at the regular checkout. Other stores or other municipalities allow you to place product throughout the store and do it through regular checkout. So there is nothing consistent in state law that regulates it as it's done by the municipality that issues the license. So one of the things that we're looking to do is to have the same law apply to all municipalities in terms of pickup that says your license is extended outside the door by however many feet so that a car can pull up. They can process your sale, do a face-to-face sale, apply all the requirements that they do for a face-to-face sale for alcohol just outside the door wherever the pickup is, process it, give you your groceries, and then you move on. Rather than having this patchwork, this quilt of different regulations around the state where each municipality can do it differently, we're seeking to make sure that it applies equally to all.
Brandon Scholes is the president and CEO of the Wisconsin Grocers Association, which represents the state's grocery industry. So there is a proposed bill in the legislature related, in fact, it looks like there's more than one to address alcohol delivery. When will these bills actually be introduced, and where are we in that process?
You bet. Both bills are now being circulated for co-sponsors. That's a process in the how a bill becomes a law where the legislators who are going to introduce the bill are asking their colleagues to support them and join on as a co-sponsor. Once those co-sponsors are collected and people agree to sponsor the bill, then it will be formally introduced with a bill number. So the two in play right now are the first one is what we just discussed, and that is have a consistent set of rules and regulations regarding pickup at the store that apply equally to all municipalities. The second bill will be to allow home delivery of alcohol, meaning that when you shop online, the store will be able to deliver that product at home. So we need a law change to have that happen now. And so, you know, when we do that, when the bill passes and we're allowed to deliver to home, all of the same regulations will be in place in terms of selling beer, wine, or spirits to our customers. And that is, it's a face-to-face sale. You have to check an ID. You can't sell it if somebody's inebriated. You make that judgment when you look at them. All of the same things that apply now when you go to the store and buy a six-pack of beer will be in place when the stores deliver the product at home.
And would this only apply to grocery stores, or would this apply to any business that has a Class A liquor license for off sale?
It should apply to any business that has a license first to sell product. We see no reason why this should be only grocery stores. I don't think that would be fair. So if you do have a license to sell beer, wine, or spirits, your business would have to make the decision as to whether or not home delivery fits into your business plan.
Well, Click and Collect is a relatively new service that grocery stores offer, and it's easy to see why this might be appealing to people, although some would say, well, you just got to walk a few more yards to get to the store to get your groceries. What is the appeal here? Is it just the convenience? I don't have to actually get out of my car?
It's the convenience, but it's really whatever the consumer, whatever the shopper wants to do. If it's a function of they can't get out of their car, if they've got kids they've got to take care of, if they have a time constraint, their work hours don't permit it. You know, we have time restrictions on when we can and cannot sell spirits. We stop at 9 p.m. at night. So it just really depends. You know, in the grocery industry, grocers are driven to satisfy their customers and meet their needs and demands in terms of what they want. Convenience is a big part of that, as well as price and quality and things like that. But, you know, it's a little bit of a joke. Is, you know, what do you want? You want your customer to have a non-eventful trip to the grocery store. In other words, your guests come in, they buy what they want, they see what they want, they collect what they want. They go to the checkout aisle. They don't wait more than a minute or two to get checked out. Their groceries are bagged, and sometimes they're taken out to the car, or they take their cart to the car, and they go home. It's an uneventful trip. And so for some people, shopping online is an uneventful trip. And it's not just groceries. I mean, everybody can talk about how much they buy online. So to buy your groceries online, all the things that you want in the store, that's what we're seeking to do.
Yeah, I get that. Listeners, what do you think? Should municipalities make it easier for grocery stores to sell liquor online? Let us know at 800-642-1234. Our conversation with Brandon Scholes, President and CEO of the Wisconsin Grocers Association, continues in a moment. We have some calls. We'll take those when we come back. I'm John Munson in for Kate Archer Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson in for Kate Archer Kent. Grocery stores across Wisconsin are asking for permission to make it easier for them to deliver alcohol to their customers. There's an effort in the state legislature to do just that. We want to know what you think of that idea. Are you in favor or opposed? Why? Give us a call at 800-642-1234 or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Brandon Scholes is with us. He's president and CEO of the Wisconsin Grocers Association. And we have some calls. So let's go to the phones and hear from Giella in Nina first. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. I oppose it. A reason I oppose it, when I come to City Hall in Nina by the Walmart first. Okay, this is our responsibility, what kind of society we want. We want everything commercial or money-making, or we want a healthy society. Walmart, Pick and Save, Festival Food, everybody have a million items to sell to make money. When it comes to liquor and tobacco, it should not be on the click and pack should not be drive through. There is some certain laws. Anybody who serve alcohol, he must have a bartender license. When we serving outside, we don't have a bartender license. We can't check people ID when people sitting in the car. We can't see how intoxicated they are. So we can't enforce all the liquid laws when people sitting in the car. We can't judge them. So tobacco and alcohol should not be drive through. We should pick a healthy society over the money.
Okay, we get it. Jay Ellis saying, we can't really selling to someone in their car isn't workable and it's not healthy. And this is basically just about money. Brandon, what do you say to that?
Well, again, I think it is more of a convenience matter. There's two things. One, it is a convenience because somebody who is ordering online and then coming to the store to pick up is not going to necessarily buy anymore because it's online. The second point, and it's a good question, is when the sale is transacted, when the customer arrives and hands over a credit card and an ID, that is the same sale as what would be made inside. You have to check their ID, you have to check their age, you have to make sure that they're not inebriated. You have to do all the things that you do when you sell the product inside, just as you would when the customer arrives to pick the product up. It is a matter of convenience. Yes, there's no doubt. And while we noted earlier, and you noted from the FMI report, that online sales will increase by 20 or 30% by 2025, it's not necessarily additional sales. It will replace sales inside at the register. So it's a shift in the balance of where sales are made online or in the store.
Giella, thank you for your call. Let's go to Steve next, who's calling us from Madison. Steve, good morning.
Good morning. I'd like to say it's not a good idea. You're going to have young workers sell that to their... There is no...
Steve, you're in a bad cell area. We're having trouble seeing you. I think Steve's point is that you're going to have young people working in grocery stores who are going to sell liquor to their buddies.
Well, anybody who has bought a six-pack of beer at any time knows that when you go through the checkout line, if the cashier is not of legal age, 18 or over, they cannot even touch the product. They have to call a supervisor, somebody who is older, who then comes, takes the product, scans the product, and then it pushes down the lane to be bagged. So the same would apply on an online pickup. There's nothing in the proposed law that would make it easier. It is the same restrictions that apply in-store versus pickup at curbside.
So this does not then, your contention would be, this does not make it easier for minors to purchase alcohol?
Oh, absolutely not. No. Look, the last thing a grocer wants to do, or anybody that does online, is to make a situation where they would be, if they violated the law, if one of their employees violated the law, they would lose their liquor license. It would be suspended by the municipality. And no retail outlet wants to have that happen. So we don't need to make the laws easier. We just need to apply the laws equally at the point of sale and the point of pickup. So no, there is nothing here that makes it easier to sell beer, wine, or spirits to a minor at all.
Brandon Scholes is president and CEO of the Wisconsin Grocers Association, which represents the state's grocery industry. Let's take another call. Tim is with us this morning in Eau Claire. Tim, thanks for joining us on the morning show.
Thank you for having me. Quick question. So I live in Eau Claire, and we have different laws than the neighboring towns. They're able to sell beer after 9 o'clock, where Eau Claire shuts down beer sales at 9 o'clock. Would you have to...
Oh, I think Tim's getting a call. Tim's wondering if stores would need licenses in all sorts of different places, and I think his concern is about the patchwork that you talked about earlier, Brandon.
Well, again, each municipality issues the Class A license, which allows for off-premise sales, or a Class B license, which is generally what bars and restaurants have. They are also allowed to sell products. So this bill would just address pickup at the grocery store. I suppose you could have it applied to anybody, but really it's for grocery stores. And again, state law says that you can start selling beer, wine, or spirits at 6 a.m. and you have to stop at 9. I'd have to check to see if there are other than bars that may be able to sell after 9 a.m., but for the most part, every grocery store shuts down their liquor department at 9 p.m.
In the feature that we heard earlier, we heard from Marge Bates, an alderperson from Neenah, who has been fighting against online alcohol sales. Her contention is that it would make binge drinking worse for people. How do you respond to the criticism that making it easier to buy alcohol online promotes unhealthy behaviors around alcohol?
I understand and appreciate her concern. However, I don't think it's founded in any basis. Because if you drive to the store and you buy 2 6-packs and you go home and you drink them, that's no different than if you go online, order 2 6-packs, drive to the store, pick them up, and go home. And again, I would remind your listeners that if somebody shows up to pick up an order and they're drunk, they will be refused. That product will not be sold because, again, the same requirements for face-to-face sale in the store remain the same for a curbside pickup.
Do either one of the bills in the legislature or being circulated right now require stores to provide uniform training for people who will be delivering these curbside orders?
Well, of course, those laws are already in place. And so neither bill changes that. Neither bills weaken the current requirements for online sales for sales in general. So there's no change in what employees are required to do.
And if they see they're delivering this alcohol to the car and they see someone under the influence, is the onus then on them to report that person to the authorities or refuse to complete the sale?
No, they refuse to complete the sale. I don't know that the law requires them to report them to authorities, but certainly that is the right thing to do. No store wants to be responsible for somebody's actions when they're inebriated, when they've been overserved, when they've had too much to drink, and they are on the property and the premise. The same would hold true if it was a face-to-face sale in the store. They would take that same action on a curbside pickup. And if it was a home delivery, they simply would leave. They would not complete the transaction.
Okay. Brandon Scholes, thank you so much for joining us this morning. Appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me. Have a great day.
You too. Brandon Scholes is president and CEO of the Wisconsin Grocers Association. You're listening to The Morning Show. I'm John Munson in for Kate Archer Kent on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Stay tuned.